Kana, and welcome to episode 69 of the Hawthorne Debate Club. My name is Jamie Clay, and I am joined very, very rarely by a couple of gentlemen to have a few conversations and discussions about West Bromwich Albion. So let me start by saying a warm hello to my good friend Alex Collins.
Hello.
And hello to my little brother Joe Clay.
Hello.
Well, it has been absolutely ages since we last recorded. The last time we spoke and gathered at the Debate Club, Albion felt like we were on top of the world. We just crushed Middlesbrough in what seemed to be one of those season-defining performances that would be on the promotion DVD at the end of the year. It would be the moment that everything changed and the inspirational, dramatic, upbeat music kicked in, which showed us go on a run of form that would see us fly up the table, cruise into playoffs, even automatic promotion spots, and see us triumphant at the end of the season, waiting and planning for life in the Premier League. However, just 5 weeks from then, I know it feels like it's been a lot longer. We've been wasting away, wanting to do the podcast, but unable to get together. Seems like circumstances, the planets were out of alignment, wouldn't let us meet on a regular basis to do the podcast. But in that period, it's really well and truly come apart. It feels now like we are once again flirting with the siren call of disaster, the impending doom that we've not had to navigate for however long. It seems to well and truly be back. The vultures are circling in the sky. But before we get to all of the diagnosis and the dissection of the last few weeks and what's gone wrong, let me say a huge thank you for still being here after all this time, still thinking about your old friends at the Debate Club. Thanks for downloading and listening. We really do appreciate it. We have definitely missed you. So we just really appreciate that you're taking the time out of your day to listen to us ramble on about West Brom once again. If you are so inclined, please do share the podcast with your friends and family. You can leave us a little review or like. If you don't want to, because we're not regular enough, that's also okay. We're totally giving you a pass. So what are we going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the last few results. I think with a particular focus on what was kind of billed as the make or break part of our season, the kind of Good Friday into Easter Sunday. And we're going to see what kind of effect Jesus's death and resurrection had on West Bromwich Albion's performances. The clue is that it wasn't good. There was certainly no coming back from the dead. It feels like we well and truly are buried. But the game against Rotherham, and a particular leaning into the recent home game against, gosh, it's so bad, I've actually seemed to have blocked it out. Who is it against?
QPR.
QPR, that's right. Yes, gosh, yeah, that's some sort of PTSD. My mind's not allowing me to recall the events of Monday. So let's start with the QPR game. I guess off the back of a really heavy defeat against struggling Rotherham, coming into the game against QPR, I think the statistic was that they hadn't won. They'd lost 9 of their last 11 games or something in that realm. And it felt like our home form versus their current form meant that this was an easy 3 points. And it started off encouragingly. We took a 2-0 lead, but it was a game that we never felt like we were winning, in my opinion. What did you guys make of the performance against QPR?
First of all, I want to mention that having Albrighton in the starting lineup didn't give me a lot of pleasure seeing that on there. I don't think he deserves to be in there. It's probably down to injuries more than anything. But yeah, as you mentioned, 2-0 ahead early, but again, it just seemed laboured. No other club would do that, would they? You know, if they're against a good club, playing a good team, you could understand it, but we weren't playing a good team. We made them look good. And even though I like Gareth Ainsworth and his like 80s rock and roll style, what you'd see down Stourbridge Rock Cafe, hanging out with very young people, just living his life, they didn't deserve it, but we didn't deserve it either. So it was one of those games where it was just like nothing. It was a nothing game and it shouldn't have been for us. That was our push on. We've made a mistake against Rotherham. Let's go and push on and get this victory and show the other teams around us. The last few weeks have been a blip, but I think that sums up our season, these two results. It's just been up and down, not consistent. And the other teams have consistency around us.
Yeah, it was a really strange one. I think in Jed Wallace's words, they bottled it. You know, it was a really good opportunity to creep into the playoffs. But, you know, how we went 2-0 up, I still don't know. I was shocked. And then their first goal was an absolute corker of a cross and, you know, good header. Second goal was a mistake. These things happen. It's such a strange game, strange weather as well. Like, it went from really sunny and, you know, summer temperatures to pouring down with rain, you know, freezing cold. So it must have been quite a difficult game to play in. But I think at the moment we've been stricken with injuries, and I think at least five of our starting 11 and some of our key players are out at the moment. Your likes of Palmer, O'Shea, Malumbi, Bartley, arguably. Then you've got Okay Kuslu, Phillips, you've got Dean Garner. We really are suffering at the moment with injuries, so I can't expect us really to win. It's one of those really. Like, this is why we didn't do so well at the start of the season, because most of the players that are playing at the moment started back then. And I think the players, as you mentioned, Albrighton and Chalobah have come in and they're not really bedded in very well. They probably need at least another season. But at the moment, they don't look up to the pace or the standard that we're setting ourselves under Corbyn.
But I think after making Rotherham look like Real Madrid on Friday, and then QPR turning up in something that was reminiscent of a Barcelona kit, it really did feel like we made these teams look a lot better than they were. We flattered them. And I think the thing that was worrying for me in these performances wasn't necessarily the lack of quality. I think there was an expectation that with the key injuries, that the standard of players that were coming in to replace key players, there was going to be a noticeable drop off. I think having Malumbi and Yakushlu, there's a drop down to Chalobah and TGH. But I think the thing that was concerning for me, and this was present in both games, and it's more worrying that it was a struggle against QPR, is the lack of urgency and intensity in the play. It felt like a game that was demanding more of the players. This was about, like, those old football cliches, who wanted it more, who was up for the battle, who was going to pick up the game by the scruff of the neck and drag it across the line. And I still feel like, regardless of the perceived lack of leaders that we have in the current, well, in that, at least in that starting 11, there was enough experience on that pitch, enough winners on that pitch for you to think, actually, there could be more urgency, there could be more intensity. It all felt very laboured and slow. I think that's something of a bit of a pattern recently, that there's this really slow, laboured build up. And I understand that there's a lot of theorists out there and people who analyse the game that will explain why it's happening and what the philosophy is intended for, to draw teams onto you, to create space in behind opposition, to try and exploit various weaknesses. But it's the tempo that feels like I'm not asking for erratic football, but it lacks that cutting edge that you want when your team is trying to make that final push for a promotion spot. And that's the thing that I've found most frustrating watching these last two games. And I guess into the games before that, because form's been poor for a while, but particularly in the Rotherham and QPR game, especially at home. And there were some comments on the radio as we were driving back on WM. And it seems to be since Valerian Ismail was our manager, but then Steve Bruce and now into Corbyn, this idea that somehow the fans are responsible for ensuring that the on-field performance is energized by being passionate and vocal so that the players can feed on it to make their performances better. And it's such a bizarre, I know there's some weird symbiotic relationship that exists between the crowd and the team on the pitch, but the expectation that the fans should get really vocal and encourage and support this kind of meager, apathetic football that we're watching at the moment, to me, is bizarre. I feel like, if anything, if the players came out with a bit of electricity and energy against QPR, the fans would have been well up for it. In fact, the proof in the pudding being how Millwall turned up, their fans were making a racket and the atmosphere was really good, and it still didn't, like, conjure up this magnificent performance.
For me, Jamie, I've not seen the Albion lose at the Hawthorns in 12 games. And I find that fascinating how I can feel disheartened by drawing, you know, 2-2 with a QPR team that are, you know, fighting for their lives in the Championship. So I just find it's amazing, really, how we can go from this time last autumn, where we were worried about going down ourselves, to where we are now competing for playoffs. Now, I think they've done an incredible job. And I wonder whether there's fatigue as a part to play, and whether the players have just, run out a bit of steam. That's why we're getting the injuries, and we're having to use the, for want of a better word, the dregs of the team now.
Yeah, I do try and keep giving myself that little extra bit of perspective that when Corbyn came in, we were at the bottom of the table, and I keep trying to reset my expectations. Actually, we were just going to be happy to stay up. If he just kept us up, that was going to be enough. And like you said, this run we've been on at home is totally unprecedented. Carly, my wife, has got a season ticket now at the Albion. She was coming for the few games at the end of the Steve Bruce era, but she's got a half season ticket. And Steph, who comes to the games with us as well, got half season ticket. They've never seen Albion lose. That's like you say, that rattles my brain around its head. I think Monday they were the second and third goal they'd seen in their entire half season ticket scored at the Albion against us. And the other one was Ben Brereton Diaz's free kick that we all argue Josh Griffiths should have saved. So we are right. It's been this amazing run of form at home. And yet it just doesn't feel you'd think about that and there'd be an excitement and this kind of fortress Hawthorns mentality, but it doesn't feel like that. Everything feels so fragile. And even when Semi Ajayi scored the second goal on Monday, it felt a strange knife edge atmosphere. And it's been like this, I guess, for a while. And perhaps this speaks to the off the field issues as much of anything else. But there is this tightrope act every week at the Albion whereby it all feels like it's a powder keg ready to turn ugly at the slightest provocation. So that when Darnell Furlong doesn't pass the ball forward, it feels like there's going to be a riot. Or when Carlin Grant starts warming up for a substitution and comes on, there's already groans and moans in the crowd. It feels like everything is this polarizing. We're either in love with something or totally fearful that it's all going to go wrong. And it's really strange how this season is kind of started off so negatively, suddenly so positive, and then it's suddenly like petering out. It does feel like you said, Alex, and I think you're absolutely right, that it's just kind of burnt out a little bit. And I guess that leads into the question then, well, what's possibly gone wrong? We've already kind of pointed out a couple of things like injuries and fatigue. Some of the comments are quite negative about Corbyn over the last few weeks. I think it's fair to talk about it. I personally don't want to just slag him off because I think he's done a great job getting us to where we are right now, so that we're even having conversations about the playoffs, which, like you said, Alex, felt so remote just a few months ago. But I think it's fair to have the conversation at least because he's not perfect. He has got stuff wrong. Is there anything you feel like Corbyn could have done differently in spite of the injuries over these past few weeks to kind of see us better across the line?
For me, regarding Corbrand, I think he's a good manager. I think he needs time. I wouldn't ever say he's doing a bad job. But when he joined, we were 23rd with 14 points, and Millwall was sixth with 25 points. So there was only 11 points between it. So everyone keeps saying we were near bottom. It wasn't as bad as everybody's saying. It was so close. Like from 8 points to where we are, from 8 points was to mid-table. It wasn't as bad as everyone was saying. It was really early. He's done a great job because Bruce was doing such a bad job. I think he's done well at because he's changed around the mentality of the squad to a winning squad when we were losing all the time. I think that's the impressive part about Corbyn. But I think he could have tinkered a little bit with the formations. I know he has gone in games to this three at the back and the wing backs and everything. But it's that thing what really irritates me that Jed Wallace keeps getting put out of position to bring all Brighton in, or he'll put him in the middle. I think it's totally wrong. He doesn't play as well there. I know he floats around when he's on the right wing, and everyone says that he's got that bit of thing. But John Swift works better in the middle, and Jed Wallace works better out in the right wing. And I think he could have stuck to that. And then we have had injuries, but maybe change up, maybe bring a J into the, CDM. There's loads of things he could have done. He obviously didn't have any confidence in these players to do that. So that's why he played your Chalobahs and TGH. I don't think TGH is that good, to be honest. I think he is one of those players who is the fringe player. I don't think he'll ever be a first team player for the Albion out and out in the centre midfield because there's only two positions he's playing for. And Yakushu's got one, definitely. And Malumbi is the one unless there's injuries. But I think he could have played the transfer market a bit better. That's my problem with him. He went for a position that we didn't need with all Brighton. That was a massive, massive mistake by him. We could have gone for a left winger. We could have gone for many. We could have gone for a striker. You know, we've had Deco, we've had Asante out, suspended, injured. These are the things we could have done with. And that's my only problem with Corbran. And he probably does need the technical director help. I think that was the problem with Corbran. I think he needed that person, the football director, helping him with these purchases. So it's not all his fault. It's the setup again. It's the Albion. It's the background of the Albion. It's not an easy place for Corbran to, you know, be successful in. Everyone says him, you know, John Percy's just done a brilliant interview with him around his love of football, love of tactics, all that. And I believe him. But being a nerd in football doesn't make you the best manager in the world. You know, like, you can look at all the bits and pieces. Doesn't make you the best manager in the world. So he's made mistakes, but I wouldn't get on his back. I think we're just annoyed at where we are. We could have got into the playoffs. It's a terrible championship this year. And we had a massive chance of being promoted to the Premiership.
Yeah, I said to Jamie after Bruce got sacked, you know, we need a saviour to come in, like a miracle worker. And I think, like, big picture thinking where we are now, I think we found him. And I do think Corbran is a quality manager. I would argue the best in the Championship, or at least up there, the best. I think we have just been hampered with injuries, and that's the only reason that we're not in the playoffs at the moment. I really think we've struggled losing key players like O'Shea and Yakuslu in particular, and a goal threat through Dean Garner or Phillips on the wing, with Swift and Wallace, you know, being able to play in their positions. And then we're also no longer able to bring on good substitutions. So I think that's also a thing to be considered. I reckon if we don't go up or don't go into the finish in the playoffs this season, it's purely down to the injuries that we've had. And you could argue maybe a lack of firepower, or that 20 plus goals a season striker, which DK has got the potential to become if he stays injury free. And so has Asante, if he keeps working as hard as he does.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation. I'm very much in the same camp as you two, that I'm a huge fan of Corbran. And I think you can be a huge fan of Corbran and also recognise that there definitely could have been things done differently over the last few months. I think both those two things can be true at the same time. And the thing that, I guess, for me, the injuries definitely play a huge part in what's gone wrong this season. Although some of the players, I think people stretch their potential influence. I think, like Matt Phillips, I agree, was having a real wonderful vein of form, but it was often discussed that's the Matt Phillips way. That's what Matt Phillips does. He turns it on for those few games with a new manager. It would have been interesting to see if Matt Phillips could have maintained that form. And I think people probably overplay how good he was going to be and how fruitful he would have been. The reality that we've lost Jason Malumbi and Dara Shea for a couple of games and Yakuslu for the last two. I think the big one for me is Alex Palmer. I think Josh Griffiths really has grown over the last few weeks. But I said it at the time when it happened, it shocked me how much of that Jenga piece he was, that when he was removed, the whole tower came crumbling down. The way he commanded the defence, his kind of shot-stopping ability, his command of the box. He wasn't a perfect goalkeeper. I just think he added some of those intangible qualities that I know you two like to speak about a lot. They were so obviously present in Alex Palmer. I think he was such a huge miss. I think the thing that worries me about just what I've seen over the last few weeks is that for someone who everyone calls detail-orientated in Corbran, and no doubt we've seen the fruits of that detail-oriented mindset that he has, is that when these injuries have happened, there's no adjustment to the way we try to play. He just puts worse players in to do the same thing. And I think this is when you have this swapping players into their non-preferred positions to force the system to still be present on the pitch. And to me, I would think that someone as detail-oriented would think the thing I want to do will not work because I don't have the required pieces for it to function, and I should try something different. I think the thing that struck me more than anything else on Monday particularly, but it was definitely true against Rotherham as well, was how much the midfield was struggling, completely overrun, struggling to receive the ball, turn and distribute it. We didn't get to see any of Taylor Gardner-Hickman's technical proclivity to pass the ball and distribute. Chalobah was clearly struggling in that kind of breakup role that Yakuslu does, and being the quarterback, and so to speak, but they'd just been dropped in there and the expectation that they could do what Malumbi and Yakusha did. That's really strange to me, that I feel like you should have tried something different there. I'm not saying I know more than Corbran, but it just feels like there was at least an opportunity to try something different. Just to clarify there, I'm not like trust like getting at Corbran. I do think, like I say, his options are limited, but at the same time, I really would have liked to have seen just a little bit, just a different approach, given that we didn't have our strongest starting 11. And I agree with this whole Jed Wallace. Anytime he's off the right, he just doesn't look the same player. Although saying that, he's been a bit of a shadow of his former self. We're not going to talk too much about the Millwall game, but he definitely hid in that game a little bit. But anyway, that's the last two games. So I'm going to ask you both for your opinion now. Is there any possibility? It's mathematically still possible. In fact, I think the gap's virtually the same as it was before these two games. Can you see us making the playoffs now at this point?
No, not at all. I think this weekend, what we've just spoken about, was the make or break for our season to get into that playoffs. I think we've got some tough games coming up, and other teams have got less tough games. So I think let's try and have a good end to the season. But yeah, we're not making it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a tall order. I think all the stars will need to align. We've got six games left. We're currently on 57 points. I reckon you'll need about 68 at least to finish in the playoffs. And in those six games, we're playing Sunderland, Sheffield United and Norwich. Three really tough games. So to get 9 points from those, that's going to be very difficult.
It is difficult, but these are the types of game we've flourished in this season. That's the only thing that I keep thinking. It's these games against the big teams where we do seem to rise. Even against Burnley, we've played well. Against Middlesbrough, we played well. The only one out of the lot of them was Sheffield United, who we struggled against. We've come back against Luton and beat them 3-2 at their ground. So it's almost like the teams in and around us, we seem to kind of raise a game. And if we do win those games, we'll be taking points off our direct competition to reach the playoffs. There's part of me that still thinks we can do it. It's frustrating because it feels like it was almost harder work to be out of the playoffs than it was in the playoffs after the last couple of games, because no one else seems to want to go for it either. And so it is a missed opportunity this weekend, but I'm still holding out hope. I'm not even that fussed at the moment really about whether we do get into the playoffs or not, because I don't think we'll do anything in the playoffs, but I still think we might just sneak it. I'm not sure. But when I look at the teams that are there or thereabouts, Millwall, not an impressive side, Preston, and all of these other teams that are going to be kind of on the final day fighting out for those fifth and sixth places, I think third and fourth are kind of sewn up now. I can see us just somehow still being in with a shout on the final day.
Yeah, I mean, stranger things happen at sea. And if there's any team that like a challenge and to do things the hard way, it's West Brom, isn't it? So who knows?
Who knows indeed. Just out of curiosity then, providing just as a kind of a general intrigue as to the whole conversation, if it's not Albion season this season, obviously Burnley are already promoted. Who do you think going up second?
I think Sheffield United will. I think they've got a kind of little eye on the FA Cup semi-final, but I think they've just got that worker players, you know, those British players. Not all British, but they've got, you know, the British back line, Egan, those type of players. I think they just will get them over the line this year because last year were they in the playoffs and they failed to do that. I just think they've got it this year. I don't think Luton or Middlesbrough, especially Middlesbrough, won't catch up with them. Luton seem to be in a bit of form now, so they're the only team I could see getting second.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too interested. I haven't really studied the automatic place like I have the playoff place, but I reckon Sheffield United would have to slip up quite majorly. Hearing from Joe, it sounds like they've got the steel to deal with that.
Oh, very well done, Alex. I like that. That's interesting. That's really good. Yeah, I think I agree as well. I think what this is shaping up for next season in the Championship is that you're going to have some really strong sides coming down from the Premiership. But in the Premiership, there's going to be a promoted side that, in my opinion, could be one of the worst promoted sides of all time. I think the playoffs are so weak. If you extract Burnley, who are already obviously gone, and Sheffield United from that little Royal Rumble of teams in there, the teams that you've got left, Middlesbrough, Preston, Millwall, Luton, I just think that that is a radical that one of those teams potentially could be in the Premier League next season, and yet we're outside the shop looking in through the window.
But in all fairness, Jamie, I thought that last season, I thought the teams that were going up wouldn't stand a chance, and Forest have spent a lot of money, and who are the other teams?
Bournemouth and Fulham.
Yeah, they seem to be doing okay. They're in with a chance of staying up.
Absolutely, you are right. I think there's a different feel about these teams in the playoffs at the moment. I don't know, perhaps that's for a different podcast. Perhaps we can speculate in the summer.
Yeah, but the only bit what is crazy, if Luton were to get promoted, they have to pay £10 million on upgrades to the stadium so they adhere to the Premier League standards. That shows you.
Well, they're playing in people's back garden, basically, aren't they?
So, it's crazy.
As Johnny Drury famously once said on this podcast, it's like going to a cow shed. Very, very good. Obviously, there's been plenty of news, and I think generally there's a bit of a fatigue around the Albion again at the moment. Most people do seem a bit fed up. I think this weekend has well and truly popped the enthusiasm balloon that we'd all been kind of inflating over the last few months. And it does feel like a lot of momentum and energy was sucked out of everything, basically, on the field and off the field. Even the Action for Albion protests, they kind of kicked up a notch this weekend. I think that was due to coincide with kind of the dip in form and this realisation that promotion wasn't on the cards anymore in most people's imagination, at least, of how the season's going to unfold. And they tried to do this walk into the game late thing. Me and Alex were already in the game. I was accidentally late, but not to the point where I came in late. But that didn't seem to be... I'd be interested to see what their numbers were for that. But at least from eyeballs in the ground, it didn't seem to have resonated particularly with the majority of fans. And I don't know if that speaks to this general apathy and fatigue that's settling over the club again. Everyone just seems really fed up. And I guess partly one of the reasons why we probably haven't recorded the podcast, that most people feel a little bit just ground down with how miserable it is being an Albion fan. It was very, very beautifully said once on a Royal Mail advert by Elton John, "I like nice things." And it just feels like, as an Albion fan, we're not allowed nice things. Have we got any kind of financial nous about what all of these reports to HRMC means? I think people are better off listening to other podcasts if that's their vibe, but you two got any thoughts about where we stand there?
I've got a suggestion that I'd like to put forwards, and I was having a think about this on the way home from the game on Monday. If I reckon Action for Albion are doing a fantastic job, but I reckon they need to go to China. I think they should set up a GoFundMe page to go out to China and to speak to Guacamole in person, or to at least like stand outside his office or go inside to his reception and ask for a meeting with him. Now, I think that's one of the only ways that they'll be able to get any sort of traction, because at the moment, I can just see Guacamole just sitting in his mansion in China.
I don't think that Alistair would be coming back if he went to China. Yeah, he'd disappear. I think they'd lose their head man if that happened. But I think that is taking it up a notch, isn't it? And if that is viable...
What, invading China?
Yeah, it is taking up a notch, but... But no, if that is a viable thing, you know, I think a lot of Albion fans would support that, because for me, it's horrible. You see the statements from Birmingham today and they're in awful place at the moment. I could just see for us, if we don't get promoted in the next couple of seasons and we start meandering around that middle table, maybe, you know, lower the middle table, I can see us ending up with these statements in the middle of the season and being more common in, you know, the price of football constantly. We're too common of a news on there and Kieran Maguire, but it's just, yeah, I could just see us, you know, becoming that. And I don't know, it's just, it is alarming, and there's stuff we need to do around this, but it's hard, isn't it? The guy is nowhere to be seen. So what are we supposed to do? If he's not selling, he's not selling.
You
Yeah,
know, it does. It feels like a really desperate situation, I guess. Like, we're not financial experts, and like, you've got Kieran Maguire and people like that, the Liquidator, and all the Action for Albion guys, and all the other podcasts kind of discussing it as well. And it's out there now, it's out in the ether, so to speak, that there is this massive financial problem at the Albion. There's all of this outstanding loan money and never really looking like it's ever going to come back into our bank account, and all of the kind of fear about the what will happen to the club, will we go into administration, and all of this unknown about what lands ahead. And the only kind of oasis in it all is the Premier League. Somehow we can get back there, and the money situation we sorted, we've suddenly become much more of a saleable asset for Guac and Lye. But the reality of it is, in the absence of those things, it's difficult to know what a plausible outcome is in it, really, because as Kieran Maguire's always wanted to stress as well, is that change isn't always better. Look at Blues are like a little bit of a kind of a glowing example. They went from Carson Young into this situation where, admittedly, there's no criminality necessarily to what's going on, but they're in as worse a position as they were before. And so this idea that if Albion just sell to anyone, we're going to be better off is also very, very naive. And I think the reality of it is now is that we're not a particularly saleable asset where we currently stand, and there's no real reason. I can't why Guac and Lye wouldn't just try and wait it out and hope that somehow, in the kind of chaos that is football, we just fluke a decent season back up. But I guess I don't know. I'm no expert. And my hope, obviously, is that there's just always a West Bromwich Albion for me to go and watch, whether in the Championship or in the Premiership. And I think realistically, or even if we're in League One, I'll still go. I'll still enjoy it. And I don't think there's any real possibility that we become the next Mansfield or Bury. I know that's probably Bury and Mansfield fans thought that as well, but I just think well, I don't know what I think. Strange place to kind of end a rant, but it's one of them. Probably plenty of time to talk about that over the summer.
I think we'll have some more news around the summer anyway. So when the football's died down, people have the time to look into the information with a lot more detail and granular details.
When they start selling all our players and
Yeah.
we start losing the
Imagine.
state rights to the stadium.
I think you'll find it hard to sell some of our players. It could be that.
But why can't all chairmen be like Ryan Reynolds at Wrexham? Like,
Oh,
it was
man.
amazing to see how happy he was after Ben Foster. Fair play to Ben Foster for saving that penalty. Like, he's so good to see. I was watching it on YouTube earlier, and
Yeah,
it
it's
brings a smile
classic.
to your face. Brilliant.
Folk hero and such. Albion could do with a few of them right now. It felt like we perhaps had a few of them and they were writing their destinies in the star, but it does feel like it's crumbled a little bit. And who knows, it could still be the makings of a promotion campaign DVD, but it probably feels like our season is wrapping up perhaps a little bit prematurely this year. So it's good to be back talking to you both on the podcast. Hopefully we'll get another one in before now and 2024. There's always reason to be optimistic, but I think we can land the podcast there today. And all that remains for me to say is a huge thank you to you, Alex Collins.
Cheers.
Huge thank you to you, Joseph Clay.
Cheers.
Thank you, everyone, for downloading and listening this week, and we'll see you next week, maybe. Sweet dreams.